This is Family Policy Matters. This program is produced by the North Carolina Family Policy Council, a pro-family research and education organization dedicated to strengthening and preserving the family. And now from the studio, here's John Rustin, president of the North Carolina Family Policy Council.
Thank you for joining us again for Family Policy Matters. This week's show is a continuation of a broadcast we began last week featuring Dr. Gary Chapman, who was the featured speaker at the North Carolina Family Policy Council's Major Speakers Dinner event in Greenville, North Carolina on March 9, 2015. Dr. Chapman is a relationship counselor and senior associate pastor at Calvary Baptist Church in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. While he is widely known for his New York Times best-selling book series, The Five Love Languages, Dr. Chapman is also the author of numerous other books, including Desperate Marriages and Hope for the Separated. He speaks annually to thousands of couples at marriage conferences across the country and is the host of the nationally syndicated A Love Language Minute, as well as the Building Relationships with Dr. Gary Chapman radio program, both of which air on over 400 stations nationwide. In part two of this two-part series, Dr. Chapman continues a discussion of the seven traits that characterize true, authentic love and how we can live out those traits in our daily lives. Now on to Dr. Gary Chapman.
Humility. I define this as stepping down so others can step up. Jesus is the best example. Philippians chapter 2, who though he was God, did not demand his rights as God, but stepped down to become a man. And once he became a man, he stepped down even further to death, even death on a cross. And the scriptures say, let this attitude be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus. We're called upon to step down so others can step up. You know, we do this rather well for our children. Most parents are willing to step down so their kids can step up. We're willing to humble ourselves and lift them up. But what about other people? What about somebody else's son, somebody else's daughter? I was talking with a manager in a business who said to me, you know, Gary, said, I had the strangest thing happen in my office. He said, I had an opening, and I called in a young man who was just 2 years out of college. And I said, I've got an opening, and I think you might be interested in it. And he said, I wanted to talk with you about it. He said, I'm interviewing actually you and one other guy. And he told him the name of the other guy. And he said, I want to get the best person for this, and I think you might be, I don't know. And this young college graduate, 2 years out of college, said to me, how old? And he called the name of the other guy. How old is the other guy? And I said, well, I don't know, maybe 45. And the young man said, I think you should give him the job. He said, really? Why would you say that? He said, because he's older, I'm younger, I'll have other opportunities, but he may not have another opportunity. I think you ought to give it to him. And he said, I did. And he said, when that older man found out what that young man had done, he took that young man under his arms, taught him everything he knew. And so that young man, 3 or 4 years later, was promoted right up the ladder. You see, a young guy, you don't find that much, willing to step down so somebody else can step up. And it's always better to help others rise than it is to rise yourself. Number six is generosity. Loving people are generous people. We often think of generosity only as giving money, but that's only a part of it. A loving person will be generous with their time. Then it's not just time, it's also our talents and our abilities. You know, those who are super, super wealthy, when they donate, they typically get recognized. When Bill Gates formed his charitable foundation back in 1994 and made an initial contribution of $94 million, it made the headlines. But you know, you probably never read about Albert Lexy. Albert Lexy was a shoeshine guy in Philadelphia. And he heard about a fund for children at the hospital. And so he asked the hospital if he could come to their lobby 2 days a week and shine shoes if he gave all of his tips to the hospital fund for children. And they agreed to let him do it. And over the next few years, he gave $100,000 to the hospital children's fund. You see, don't think that if you don't give generously when you have little, that you will give generously when you have much. It doesn't work that way. If you're a loving person, you'll be a generous person, and whatever level you are in terms of the financial thing, you will be giving to people. You know, I wonder what would happen in most of our churches if people just gave 10% to God. I have a friend, I was visiting with him in Michigan, and we were raising some money at our church, and I was talking to him about it, not trying to get a gift from him. But he said, "Gary, did I ever tell you my story?" I said, "No, I don't think so." He said, "Well," he said, "when my wife and I got married," he said, "we both had been tithers as singles. We gave 10% to God." He said, "The first year in my business, God had blessed my business, and I just said to my wife, 'You know, honey, God has blessed us this year.'" He said, "Would you be okay if we gave 11% to God this year?" And she said, "Well, yeah, honey, that's fine with me." Well, so the next year, God blessed our business, and I went back to her and said, "Honey, you know, God's been good. What do you think? And we go up to 12%. And she said, "Well, yeah, honey." He said, "Doc Chan, we've been doing that every year of our marriage." I said, "How long have y'all been married?" He said, he smiled, he said, 49 years. So at that juncture, he was giving away 59% of all of his income. I really believe you cannot outgive God. You see, when we give to the cause of God, we give for eternity. Number 7 is honesty. Loving people are honest people. They are people of integrity. They will speak the truth. If they tell you, you can count on it. You know it's true. You know, an acquaintance will tell you what you want to hear, but a friend will tell you what you need to hear. I've always been grateful for the people who thought enough of me to tell me the truth, because when they tell you the truth, then chances are you have a chance to make things different. And what he discovered was this, that when two major plagues hit the world, and all the social elites fled the cities to survive, it was the Christians who stayed in the city and who reached out to care for everybody that was left, whether they were Christians or non-Christians. And they treated everyone as though they were family. And he said, his conclusion was, that it was not argument that led people to become Christians. It was simply observing Christians loving others as they love their own family. I really believe that the greatest power for good in the world is love. So I want to challenge you to continue growing in the grace of love. In the book, I actually give you, in every chapter, I give you a little pretest, take a little test and see where you are. And then I develop the idea, and then I give you challenges on how to cooperate with God in building these things into your life. So I hope that you will join me and others. This book was published by Doubleday and Waterbrook, secular publisher and Christian publisher. Only difference is, in the Christian version, I have scriptures in the back for study guides. And in the secular version, I just have questions for study reading groups. My objective is to try to get non-Christians to try to do this, because I know they're not going to be successful. Before we got married, I was madly in love with my wife, and I could hardly wait to be as happy as I was going to be. I mean, I'd never met a girl like this. I never felt like this before. I could hardly wait to be happy. But after we got married, I had these visions of what it was going to be like. I was in graduate school, and I thought, you know, I'll go to classes in the morning, and I'll come home in the afternoon, and I'll study, and then we'll have dinner together, and then I'll study some more, and she'll sit on the couch while I study, and when I get through studying, I'll lift my eyes, and our eyes will touch. But after we got married, I found out that my wife did not want to sit on the couch and watch me study. She would go downstairs, the apartment complex, meet people, talk to people, socialize. And I'm up there by myself thinking, this is what it was like before we got married. Only difference, I was in that dorm room, a whole lot cheaper in this place. And I had this idea before we got married that every night, about 10:30, we were going to go to bed together. Woo! Going to go to bed with a woman every night at 10:30. But after we got married, I found out it never crossed her mind to go to bed with anybody at 10:30. Her idea was about 10:30, you come up from your visitation and read a book till midnight. And I'm thinking, why didn't you read the book while I read the book? Then we could go to bed together. And before we got married, I had this idea that every morning when the sun gets up, everybody gets up. But after we got married, I found out my wife didn't do mornings. And we succeeded at being utterly miserable. And what compounded the problem for me is that 2 weeks after we got married, I enrolled in seminary to study to be a pastor. And here I am miserable in my marriage and thinking I married the wrong person. It's never going to work out. And the closer I got to graduation, the more miserable I became. Because I was saying to myself and later to God, there is no way that I can be this miserable at home and to get up and preach hope to people. And as I got closer to graduation, never forget the night I said to God, I don't know what else to do. I've done everything I know to do, and it's not getting any better. If anything, it's getting worse, and I don't know what else to do. And as soon as I prayed that prayer, there came to my mind a visual image of Jesus on his knees washing the feet of his disciples. You remember the story? And I heard God say to me, that is the problem in your marriage. You do not have the attitude of Christ toward your wife. Hit me like a ton of bricks. Because I remember what Jesus said when he stood up. Do you remember? He stood up and said, I am your leader. And in my kingdom, this is the way you lead. Leaders serve. And I knew that was not my attitude. My attitude in the early years of our marriage was something like this. Look, I know how to have a good marriage. If you'll listen to me, we'll have one. She wouldn't listen to me. I blame her. But that day I got a different message. And I said, Lord, forgive me. With all of my study in Greek and Hebrew and theology, I've missed the whole point. And then I said, please give me the attitude of Christ toward my wife. In retrospect, the greatest prayer I ever prayed regarding my marriage, because God changed my heart. Three questions made it practical for me. When I was willing to ask these three questions, my marriage radically changed. Simple questions. Number one, honey, how could I help you? Number two, how could I make your life easier? Question number three, how could I be a better husband to you? Do you know when I was willing to ask those questions? My wife was willing to give me answers. She told me. Now remember, this was long before I knew anything about the love languages. But essentially, she was teaching me how I could love her. And do you know what happened? Not overnight, but within 3 months, my wife started asking me those three questions. We've been walking this road a long time, and I have an incredible wife. I said to her the other day, you know, Carolyn, if every woman in the world was like you, there'd never be a divorce. Why would a man leave a woman who's doing everything she can to help him? And my goal through these years has been to so serve my wife that when I'm gone, she'll never find another man to treat her the way I've treated her. The woman's gonna miss me! And you know what I believe? I believe this was God's intention. Listen, God did not ordain marriage to make people miserable. God ordained marriage because he knows that he made us for each other. And when a husband gives himself to his wife like Christ did the church, and she reciprocates, we both become winners. You see, in the early days, we were both losers. I shot her and she shot me, and we stayed wounded most of the time. But when you do it God's way, you both become winners. And that's not the end. Then you can turn and bless the world with the abilities God has given you. You know what I believe? One of the reasons the contemporary church does not reach more non-Christians is because our churches are filled with married couples who have never gotten it together. And they fight or they coexist, and they have no motivation to say to non-Christians, wouldn't you like to be a Christian and be as miserable as we are? But I'm going to tell you this. If we get our marriages together, the non-Christian will recognize it. And they'll ask you, how do y'all do that? And you can tell them how your heart got changed and how you learned to serve each other. And if you get it going in the home, in the marriage, it'll spill over to your kids. It'll spill over in the church. It'll spill over in your work. And it'll permeate the whole thing. So I want to challenge you. Hopefully these words will encourage you to keep on the journey.
You've been listening to part two of a two-part series featuring a presentation given by Dr. Gary Chapman at the North Carolina Family Policy Council's Major Speakers Dinner event in Greenville, North Carolina on March 9, 2015. If you would like to learn more about the Council's Major Speakers Dinner events, please visit our website at ncfamily.org. Again, that's ncfamily.org.
Family Policy Matters is an information and analysis feature of the North Carolina Family Policy Council. Join us weekly for discussion on policy issues affecting the family. If you have questions or comments, please contact us at 919-919-919. 877-807-0800 or visit our website at ncfamily.org.